Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we talk about life at the top of the show, and then Bald Brian does a rare but enjoyable Baldywood on the new Andy Samberg movie, Palm Springs. We got that coming up in a second. First, I'll tell you about True Niagen. I've been taking cellular health vitamin True Niagen for a few months. It's getting on, maybe it's getting close to 6 months now, and I feel great. The older our bodies get, we experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects the health of our cells and our body. There's lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on the immune system, overeating also deplete NAD because cells expend more energy to function. Backed by Nobel Prize winning scientists, clinical research, and global regulatory approvals, this stuff is the real deal. I've been on it for a while. Dr. Drew's been on it for longer than I've been on it and swears by it. Support cellular energy and defense with True Niagen. That's TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month plus supply through July 31st.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the author of Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park, Andy Mulvihill. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, a Baldywood review of Palm Springs, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, unlike states and businesses, there's no reopening of his mouth. Because it's never closed. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it in. Go. Get it in. Get it on. Sorry, I just got in my car and out of my car. Get it on. Got to get on. Thanks for listening to the show and thanks for sharing with a friend. I just saw the ratings yesterday and they've gone up. And that's because you guys share the show. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
You like roller coasters, motherfucker?
Oh, apropos to our guest today. Yeah, Action Park, never been there, but I know Johnny Knoxville was working on that movie last time I saw him at the softball game. COVID-19 knocked it out this year. And if you want to know, the Father's Day, if you want to know the kind of guy Jimmy Kimmel is we used to do... He decided that Father's Day should be spent at Santa Anita Track, and everyone could go there with their kids and their family and gamble and watch the horses and drink some mimosas and have a good time. And then at some point, either that closed down or we just moved it to the UCLA girls softball field and had our Father's Day softball game at the girls softball field at UCLA, where he would bring in the ice cream truck and the hamburger truck. And it's just it's one of those perfect, if you wanted to, you know, when you try to look at somebody and you're like, I don't have time to go through their dossier, just give me the quick thumbnail sketch of who that person is. If you were doing that with Jimmy, it'd be Father's Day, UCLA. He's rented out the girls' softball field. He's got the soft swirl truck and the hamburger truck, and that's there, and all the kids are welcome. That would be his...
That's all you need to know.
That would be it. Yes. My dad's would be, could you fix my flugelhorn? Sorry.
You didn't fix it right.
Right.
And that's a being someone who's born and raised here and who doesn't have a lot of experience outside of the LA community. That's a very slice of Americana, Midwest, outside LA thing to do, which I'm sure everybody needs now and then.
Absolutely. All right. So I just engaged or began to engage. And I don't know. Here's an interesting subject. Who likes planning? You know, like it, it depends what we're planning on. If we're planning on a trip to Europe, then we like that kind of planning. I'm not talking about planning to go to the dentist or planning for your child's college future, but I just mean like we're getting to that point where it's time to start prepping the car to take to Laguna Seca. And 8 minutes ago, I was sitting inside of my Datsun 510 race car, and I was explaining the stick shifts too far this way, and I think the seat's too low. We got to raise the seat. It's a car I've never raced before, and we got to take the stick shift and flip it around so we can get it a little further out. And you sort of gauge your comfort level in the car, because if you're sitting in a race car and you're feeling not uncomfortable in terms of comfort, meaning it's always going to be hot, it's always going to be noisy, it's always going to be everything, but are things where you like them? Can you grab things organically, the clutch? How far is the accelerator pedal from the brake? And how far out does the brake stick out further than the accelerating pedal? And where your feet are, where's the shifter? Where are you sitting? Is the seat lean back? Where are the harnesses? You know, all that kind of stuff. We're just doing that now, and there's just something satisfying.
Sure.
There's something satisfying about it.
I imagine you want to think about it as least amount as possible. You want to be as much muscle memory. You're like, that should be there, and that should be there, and where is that is not the thought you want to be having.
Not when you're going fast, but the part that I like about it a lot is, I just said to Sean, I said, what's the rear end on this car? Meaning, what's the gearing on it? Is it a 444? Is it a 311? Is it a 433? Like, we need to make sure this thing is geared for Laguna Seca. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And now it's that sort of investigate process and then fix it if it's not. It's just kind of a prep thing that I just enjoy. I guess it's, I don't know. It's like that thing when you were a kid and you thought you were going to go out on an adventure and you got a backpack and you go, all right, I got my buck knife. I got my can of beans. I got my can opener. I got that cool cup that collapses into a smaller. It's carrying a hockey puck, but it collapses into something a little taller than a hockey puck that leaks. So it's an awesome adventure. It's awesome.
Well, and it's the beginning of a ritual,
right?
Because you know you look forward to this, and it's that time of year again,
right? So I do just enjoy that planning part of life, and I think you could almost separate our society into the groups that like looking at the schematics and the plans and the we're going to do an addition on our house, and here's the artist rendering of it, who really dig that and get off on it, and then the ones that are like not interested.
Does that carry over in other parts of your life? Like, I'm the kind of planner who likes to have my emergency kit, right? And it's all stocked up and it gets refreshed every couple of years, like clockwork, because I get a sense of satisfaction from having planned for that emergency. God willing, it never comes. But you know what I mean? Chris, you'll be like, oh, you know what we should have in our emergency kit? Band-Aids. Like, all over it. They're already there. Don't worry about it.
You're ready.
Yeah, there's something satisfying about being effective. I think there's something satisfying about that thing where you're sitting around the campfire, you're up on the mountain, you're camping, somebody pulls out the beers and then goes, oh shit, these Heinekens, they don't have a twist top, they have a pop top, and everyone looks at each other, then you pull out your bottle opener and they go, yeah, that guy.
This is me. You're describing me. I will do a video walkthrough of the console of my car, because it looks like hell, but it's got everything you might need. It's got the wet wipes. It's got the bottle opener. There's the corkscrew and a bottle opener. God forbid we're in the middle of nowhere and need to open a bottle of wine. But then Truvia or Stevia, God forbid we go to a restaurant that doesn't have it. This is the console of my car. That's my purse. Oh my God.
You're a Jewish mother.
You're like Hillary Clinton with the Tabasco.
Yeah, with the hot sauce. I love planning vacations. I think in a former life, I was a travel agent, to the point where we were in Greece going to Italy during siesta, instead of going out or going to the beach, I planned for Italy. I love planning vacations. I love looking at recipes. And it kind of made me nervous when you talked about, you know, there are process people that just like to get, you know, mired in the process and they don't really like the results. I mean, I like results for sure, because I always end up doing these things. I love the process. I love looking for that stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought posture versus the people that just don't want anything to do with that process. I had a thought earlier today, which would immediately return this country to a utopia,
please.
Which is, there are two things, and it's all I ever heard as a young kid, and it's an interesting thing that if we just applied these two things that I heard 7,000 times between the ages of 6 and 19, we'd be right back where we needed to be in this country, which is somebody would call somebody a name, and then that person would say, shut up, and then the other person would always reply, it's a free country. I can say what I want. When I was a kid, oh, yeah. I said that a million times. I'd say whatever I wanted, and then someone would go, take that back or shut up. And then I'd go, it's a free country. I can say what I want. And then the person I said it to would say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. If we loosely applied that, if we re-embrace those two thoughts, one was, they're both on each side. One was, I'll say whatever I want, and the other was, well, you say whatever you want, but it can't hurt me. Take those two, just bring them back into the vernacular for this country, and we'd be in pretty, pretty good shape.
Off to the races.
It would soothe a lot of neuroses, that's for sure.
Yeah, sticks and stones.
People get worked up over, words and...
Where does, I don't shut up, I grow up, I look at your face and I throw up land?
Cousin of rubber and glue.
Yes, it's rubber and glue, and it's then gave way to gas, grass, or ass. Nobody writes for free.
Right.
All right, Joey's from Kauai, 49. Yes, Kauai, Joey.
Aloha.
Congratulations on Hawaii. Well, I'll give you the CNN headline. Hawaii has doubled its death toll in the last 3 days. But the real headline is you guys went from one death in COVID to two deaths in COVID the last I checked. Hawaii is like where you want to – the COVID death per 100,000 is like a – it's like golf. You want to be the lowest.
Well, we're up to –
sure.
We're up to 22. We're up to 22 now in the whole state.
Are you? Because I checked today, and it said Hawaii 2.
There's Hawaii total deaths. We've had two recently, but we're up to 22 total.
Oh, Max Pata, check it out. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Two per million or two per 100,000. That's my mistake.
Right.
But either way, you're the lowest in the land.
Yeah, and we're even lower than that because we're on Kauai, which we only have 80,000, people that live here. And we've only had 43 cases total on this island.
What do you do on Kauai?
So, I have a little gift store for tourists, and then also like a rental company where I rent baby equipment and all that good stuff.
Is it in Honolulu or is it like Lalahui?
Well, I'm sorry?
Where is it on Kauai? I visited Kauai many times. It's beloved in my family. Where are you?
I live on the west side, but I service the whole island, and then I have a little gift store down in Poipu.
Aha.
And where is all your junk come out of China?
No. I mean, since Amazon Prime delivers here, that's where I buy, high chairs and different stuff like that. Bigger stuff is just bigger, like hotel supplies and things, for rollaway beds and all that kind of stuff.
So you're buying stuff for like people who go on vacation but have a kid, but they don't want to bring the high chair. So you'll buy it. Oh, you'll sell it to them.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Like rent a crib for a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take their credit card before they get here. I don't have to talk to the kid or see a kid. Mm. Talk to their mother.
Hold on a second. I'm going back to Joey in high school. Probably grew up in the States. You know what I mean? He probably grew up in like Indianapolis or something like that. I'm going back to him in the fourth grade going, I'm going to be the greatest race car driver the world has ever seen. I'm going to be the biggest movie star, the biggest action star. Move over, Clint Eastwood.
Quarterback for the Colts.
I'll be the quarterback. I'll be the starting coach. Now he's selling trinkets in Kauai. How does that?
It's like Annie Hall. I sell taluses.
Yeah. How does that work? How does one? I mock you, and I'm jealous.
Well, I was in a. I'm from Dallas, and I was working in like animation studio doing like IT stuff, and doing that for a long time. But as you know, in the entertainment world, there's always somebody in line for your job, and they can pay somebody cheaper, so they kind of, you know, there's kind of a limit unless you're one of those creator kind of persons.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew there was kind of a ceiling, and so I'd been doing that for a long time and had the opportunity to buy a business over here and move over here because my family had been over here for about 15 years before I got here. So I kept coming back and forth and knew I wanted to get here eventually.
You know, my feeling has always been if you're going to kind of cash in, and take this in the spirit in which it's intended. But if you're going to kind of go, look, I'm done with the treadmill. I'm done with the career. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to try to get to the top of the corporate ladder or anything anymore. I just want to have a job and kind of chillax lifestyle or whatever. There's a Starbucks in Inglewood, you know, and you'll like pass it on the way to the airport. And I always look at that Starbucks, but there's a Starbucks in Santa Barbara. Just go to fucking Santa
Barbara. Yep.
Just go work on the one in Santa Barbara. You know what I mean? Like, either way, you got an apartment, you got a roommate, whatever. You're wearing flip-flops all day. Like, if you're saying, I'm off the treadmill. I'm not going to get the corner office anymore. Forget about eight figures. But I live in Santa Barbara.
Yep.
All
joking aside, Joey's in a great business out there because we made the mistake of bringing our then one-and-a-half-year-old with us to Kauai, to Princeville, and we got a babysitter 5 days out of seven. We should have gotten 8 days out of seven. It was the best money we ever spent. Joey's renting this stuff for probably a 10 times markup. It's easy money. This is a good business.
Right. What do you...
I'll rent a crib out for a week, and then I get to take it back and rent it the next week. So.
What do you figure you clear a year renting the cribs and selling the trinkets?
You know, it's probably, probably about 60, you know, just making it.
Yeah, you know, but you're living...
We're the most expensive state in the union to do business in, so it's not cheap here. You know, they get you taxed everywhere along the way. There's no tax-free. It's all GE tax, but they get you, like, wholesale, resale. You know, they get you. It's not like Texas where you can be a wholesaler.
But you live in... What I'm saying is you don't make that much money, but you live in Kauai. And you have a kind of low stress.
No, it could be worse. Yeah, no, it's very low stress. And it's better than the real world. This makes Maui and Oahu look like the real world.
By the way, I did this with my first apartment. Like, I didn't have any money. I was making $7-$8 an hour, and I had to get my first apartment. And I would look at all these shitholes in, like, Pacoima and Sun Valley and parts of Hollywood, and they were just nasty, you know? And I was like... I would rather have a couple of roommates and live in a one bedroom in a nice, safe neighborhood than have multiple bedrooms in a total dicey shithole. And I always feel that way when I see a lot of the, like, really scary, you know, the apartments you see right off the freeway off ramp where it's like you're getting off the freeway and you see the balcony with the kids' toys in it. Can we make a rule that you can't put kids' toys on a balcony of an apartment? It's such a bummer to me as a parent.
Sun beaten.
But yeah, like, if you're going to just call it a life, and I don't mean call it a life, but if you're going to go, look, my plan isn't to see how much money I can make. My plan is a sort of quality of life. And move to Kauai and sell day beds. Sorry, Joe.
There you go. Rent.
Yeah, rent.
Rent. No, I don't sell.
Right. That's right. So, did you have a question?
Oh, no. I just wanted to talk to you guys and say thank you for all your entertainment all these years. Oh, I really appreciate it. And just want to say aloha.
Aloha. And also, one more thing. You used to, when you traveled or when you went away... I'm old enough to remember going, boy, I could move to Kauai, but I wouldn't be able to hear Kevin and Bean anymore. I like those guys. Like, I'm used to my morning radio. I'm used to this store. I'm used to this food, you know. I wouldn't be able to get this anymore, and I wouldn't be able to hear that guy anymore. So moving was more than just physically moving. It was kind of spiritual. Like, you'd have to deal with it. Now, you just hear your favorite podcast, live wherever you want, and eat Chick-fil-A. All right. How are you feeling about a Baldywood, Brian? You got Palm Springs to do?
Yeah, man. Dawson, you got that intro?
Hooray for Baldywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen up on the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Bollywood!
Palm Springs is a 2020 film that is streaming on Hulu. If you have a Hulu account, you can watch it right now. It is directed by Max Barbacow. It is his feature debut. Also making his feature debut is the writer, Andy Ciara. This is both their first full-length film, starring Andy Samberg, Kristen Melody, Peter Gallagher, J.K. Simmons. This sits at 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. I was dubious because, well, I've been poisoned, no fault at all to Hulu. I've been poisoned by Netflix movies. They're of, let's just say, let's be kind and say they're of varying quality. I can only do so many Bird Boxes before I get burned, you know, beyond all recognition. But this definitely exceeded my expectations. So before we get into it.
This movie was trending, by the way. Like, I turned on, I opened Twitter and it's like Palm Springs trending. Like the movie was trending on Twitter.
Additionally, I saw a lot of people who I follow, comedians who I respect, writers, directors, saying, oh, Palm Springs, you got to see it, Palm Springs. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I saw it. So before I get into it, I didn't know anything about this movie besides what Hulu had as the one-line description. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the trailer because who's seeing trailers these days? I don't know what, number one, I want to know what you guys know about it, if anything. And number two, how much should I discuss of the plot of this movie? Should I set it up? Should I not discuss it at all?
Talk all you want. I hear it's a funny rom-com. If it's a rom-com, I just hear it's a funny kind of indie movie.
So there, it is a comedy. There is some romance involved. I would not call it a rom-com because we all know what that is. We all know what the tropes are. We all know it's kind of thought of as a chick flick. This isn't exactly that. So here's the basic premise. And this is all given away in the trailer. So if you want to avoid all information, skip ahead a couple of minutes. Otherwise, I'll just give you the very basic because I don't want to get into the twists and stuff. But so are you guys aware this is a time loop movie? Did you even know that?
Oh, I do kind of remember. I did hear about that, yeah.
It's in the one-line description on Hulu, so it's hard to avoid. But Andy Samberg, you realize, is sort of in the Groundhog Day thing where he wakes up and it's the same day every day, only he's at a wedding, a destination wedding in Palm Springs. And I'll just say this to set it up because it's crucial to the plot, and it's in the trailer. His co-star, Kristen Melody, ends up getting stuck in the time loop with him. So they are going through this together, which is a very clever twist on the premise because, so a time loop movie is going to work. It's got to be a smart movie, right? It's got to be Groundhog Day, or it's got to be Edge of Tomorrow, or it's got to be Source Code. These are all smart movies because if you lose your audience with the premise, movie's over. No one's going to care. This is a smart movie and it's a funny movie and it's also a really clever bend on the genre because you get, someone else in the loop with them. So you have conflicting viewpoints. I'll play a clip. Kalen's got a clip ready. This is Andy Samberg explaining to Kristen Melody, who's just found herself in this time loop. He's been in it for God knows how long, thousands of days. He's very casual and he's explaining to her how it all works.
What's going on?
I tried to stop you.
But what is this? When is this?
Yeah, about that. So, this is today. Today is yesterday, and tomorrow is also today. It's one of those infinite time loop situations you might have heard about.
That I might have heard about?
Yeah.
How do I stop it? I don't want tomorrow to be today. I want tomorrow to be tomorrow.
Right. That's natural. Unfortunately, that's never going to happen. Tomorrow will always and forever now be today. So.
So it's less goofy Andy Samberg wasn't Adam Sandler. It's less goofy. It's a little more serious, but there's some real sharp comedy in here, some good laughs. They get a lot of mileage out of the time loop thing. It ends up being kind of a metaphor for like dating and marriage, because without giving too much away, one really wants to get out and one's very comfortable. You know what I mean? As though they were dating in a sense. Smart movie. I really like this movie. You guys should see it on Hulu.
Do you have it at 92, 93 on?
Yeah, I put it right about a B plus, maybe an A minus. It might have been has the expectations I went into it with. Like, I don't know what this is going to be. Ended up being really good. It's not going to blow your socks off, but this is a very satisfying, smart, funny movie. And I'll say this, it's a great date movie. And when I say that, I mean, I think this is a movie that guys and girls can enjoy equally, as opposed to a chick movie or a typical Andy Samberg sort of, you know,
Daredevil or whatever movie.
Yeah, like a bro comedy kind of thing. This is a smart movie that I think both genders can enjoy equally.
Hooray for Bollywood!
7.6 on IMDb, Matt Chappell.
That's killing it, IMDb.
Can I just get out of the sevens? It's so scary. All right, let me, not scary, but it's sort of unsatisfying to have everything be in the sevens. Let me check Steve from Nebraska. Steve, 35, Nebraska.
Hey, guys.
Hi, guy.
I was calling to let you guys know, I'm in the Midwest in Nebraska, and amongst all the COVID stuff, life for me really hasn't changed all that much. Occasionally, I might have to wait in a little bit longer line to get into a store, but that's about it. But the biggest hurdle that I've had to get over is not having Paul Bryan's drops at the end of the news and the end of the show. I feel a little
How dare you!
Without those drops.
Yeah, so, the technology I'll explain, Bryan. Steve. Thank you very much for the compliment. The technology to record the show on a delay is sort of specific to the studio. They have it physically wired that way, and there's no way to do it here, unfortunately. But I appreciate the compliment.
Steve, where in Nebraska are you?
In the Omaha area.
Okay, because I was just reading an article yesterday that Lincoln, Nebraska is the least stressed out city in America. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, around here with all the, with riots and COVID, we had a couple days of some unrest. But I would say for the most part, it's really nothing's changed. It's pretty much all the same. Occasionally, I got to throw a mask on and that's about it.
I used to watch.
Well, I had friends at Creighton, and it was super fun in Lincoln.
I don't know anything from Nebraska. All I know is when I was a kid, they had Mutual of Omaha would have the Wild Kingdom. That was after Disney on Sunday nights, and they had a jingle: Mutual of Omaha, his people you can count on when the going's rough. Or maybe tough. I can't remember. I just sit around and watch all these things going, I don't know where Omaha is. And then later on, there was Nebraska, the football team, which of course I call the Corn Hustlers, because who the fuck knew what corn husk was? I lived in North Hollywood.
Hey, you want some corn? You want some corn over here?
You hustling
Opens
corn?
Opens up his jacket. Opens up his jacket.
I didn't know that Omaha and Nebraska were in the same place. I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know where any of these places were. I knew the football teams. That's all I knew. I knew about, of course, Penn State's and the Nifty Lions. I knew all the names. Things didn't mean anything. Like, what was a Purdue Boilermaker? You know what I mean? Like when you're nine.
What's a Tar Heel?
Tar Heels.
What's a Hoosier?
Well, on this subject, I was thinking about them changing the Washington Redskins and mixing it all up and all that. And can we do this? The name Redskin is offensive, but is the logo offensive? The logo looks like a proud Indian warrior chief to me.
Did say if you do Red Warrior or whatever and you don't change the logo, you're, quote, missing the point.
But
I think some people want to get...
Well, I know we're living in a new world where everyone needs to read up on everything and everyone's missing the point, but... The logo itself is a very proud portrayal of an American Indian, right? The logo itself. It's not, what I'm saying is the Cleveland Indians has a drunken cartoon Indian,
right,
basically as their logo or as their mascot. The logo on, or the the insignia on the side of the helmet of the Washington Redskins is a pretty noble looking. I mean, it's what you'd put on a coin if you were going to commemorate indigenous people,
yeah,
right? I mean, if you show that picture, Max. So my feeling is the name is offensive, but the logo is actually proud. And we can all agree that we don't want a big R on the side of the helmet or something else. Or, you know, I was also thinking of going with the name. Just leave the logo and call them the Gamblers. Okay.
problematic.
So the logo's pretty strong. Like, that's pretty proud. That's like Indian warrior, chief, you know, good stuff. Put it on the crest. What if we kept the logo? Do we have to throw the logo out with the bathwater? It's kind of what I'm saying. Can we keep the logo and change the name?
The problem, I think, is that the logo for God knows how many decades is now synonymous, or, you know, visually synonymous with the Redskins thing, so it gets taken down quite a few pegs. If the logo exists in a vacuum, I don't know how problematic it would be.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I guess, no, in a vacuum, it's fine. But can we separate? Like, can we not modify the uniform, pick a new name, which is not the offensive Redskins, but leave the non-offensive logo and see if we, in our minds, we can separate it from the logo? Because my thing is,
why? Appropriation. Are there any Native Americans on the team? Otherwise, why are you using this to represent a bunch of people that don't look anything like the person on that logo? Is, I think, what the argument would end
up. Adam, she's right. There's no Jets on the Jet roster.
Right.
That's right.
There's hardly any Lions on the Lion roster.
No, but
what about
Brian.
We'll go to college. What about the Terrapins? I think that's a turtle.
Oh, there's a few. There's a few turtles on the Maryland team.
But in terms of like a respect for a certain culture, if it was a really well-studied, wizened old rabbi, they get respect. They're known as hail as heroes. I don't know if the Jews would want them on a football helmet. It would be confusing, first of all.
Well,
but I think that's what it comes down to. I think you don't have any Native Americans. Why are you using our image?
We've never had any Native Americans on anything. Like, I mean, anything.
Then the Blackhawks are really cool.
Well, first things first. You pick the person or the tribe or the group of Vikings or whatever, or Panthers. You know, you try to pick a group that's synonymous with victory or fighting or warriors or, you know, vanquishing other groups, you know. So you pick a Viking for a reason. Like, there's no team called like the Louisville Bottoms. You know what I mean? You have power
there
pop.
There are the banana slugs.
And I think there's a couple of teams, a couple of hippie schools that just ironically gave their school stupid names just to fuck with the man.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Banana slugs.
Yeah, bananas. But
trees.
There was a team. Who was I, Maxipata? Who were we talking to who went to school?
Was it the Lord Jeffs?
No, Lord Jeff did something. But, he actually he poisoned Indians with blankets. he actually gave them the smallpox blankets. There's a school in like, I don't know, Nevada or Denver or something like that.
It was Matt DeAndre, and it was the Artichokes.
The Artichokes. Yeah, they named their team the Artichokes. But they're doing it as a goof, like calling it, like if you went to a bunch of kids and you went, what should we name our team? And you go, how about the Fighting Maxi Pads? And you went, what? No. And then they go, we're going to vote on it. And then they just, as a goof, called their team the Artichokes, or called their teams the Banana.
Scottsdale Community College, and it's Artie the Artichoke.
Right.
Sounds about right.
Right, but the Indian part is, that's a tip of the headband to the folks. Yeah. You're going, we want a proud, fighting, victorious group. So that part's fine. Change the name and keep the logo. That's what I say. Yes, Brian.
Well, as it pertains to your example, the Vikings, I think the reason why, like, Florida State Seminoles gets by and the Illinois Illini get by, you know what I mean? Because they're named after specific tribes, and they honor those tribes, like you were saying. If it's just... All right, Charlie, easy buddy.
Right.
If it was just like a generic redskin, just where the right. Indians, then right. it's like the same problem with blackface. Like, you can't just be a black guy if you're Mr. T or if you're Karl Malone, ironically. You know what I mean? You have a little more leeway than if you're just like, hey, I'm going to Halloween as like a black guy.
Well, and there's a lot of Nordic people in Minnesota.
Well, you sure. are right, Brian, as it pertains to the teams, but the problem, and you're right in that this is the problem. You should be able to do Karl Malone and not do blackface. Now we're conflating everything.
Because you're doing a specific person. You're doing right. Chris Rock. And my example's exploding in my face, but this is the way it should be. You know,
it's the way it should be. It's the way it should be. So what I was thinking is, I'm with you. It's like, keep the Indian, find the tribe that inhabited the land there, and maybe name it after that tribe. But anyway, Steve.
Does that mean the Chiefs are going to have to go?
Yeah, yeah.
Just the general chief?
Yeah, maybe they're talking about Get Smart. Steve?
Well, Adam, they actually tried to do the inverse of that. I'm from North Dakota originally, and UND was the Fighting Sioux, and there was a legitimate push for a while. They were making them change the name. And they tried to change the mascot to a small girl with pigtails and boxing gloves on and keep them the Fighting Sioux.
Sue, that's good.
Picture Johnny Cash. All right. thank you, Steve. Good luck there in
thanks, guys.
Nebraska. All right. Let's see. I'll put you on hold. Our guest is on hold as well. I don't have to fake my excitement for this new podcast series from Cadence 13. Once upon a time in the valley, before there were sex tapes, not the bootleg celebrity ones, but real ones before Paris and Kim. There was Tracy. That's right. I'm from the San Fernando Valley. This is where all this stuff went down. Once upon a time in the valley, real life, porno noir. Thriller podcast series featuring Ashley West in the 80s in the porn world takes place back in the day with Tracy Lords, and she reigned supreme, except for she was the biggest adult star. The problem is she was 15 years old. She was a sophomore in high school, but was the victim also a villain? If you like women and curves and plots and twists, this podcast is for you. Once Upon a Time in the Valley, right, Dawson?
Once Upon a Time in the Valley, available now free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio.com, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Warning, this podcast series contains graphic language and content.
All right, Andy, let's see how to pronounce his last name, Mulvihill. I'll just say it fast. He has a book out called Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. This movie was made with Johnny Knoxville just a few months back. Folks in the region know all about it. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Andy right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Ace Man, I'm a listener since 97. I love you guys. Dawson, Gina, Brian, Loxamana, especially, and Gary. You guys all make the show better. But you guys have become the ultimate tool tune. I have to roll my windows up now. I'm so scared of all these fucking pussies out there. I'm at a red light and you start talking about the stuff you say, and next thing I know, I'm getting bad looks from people. I love every minute of it. Keep it up.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Thank yous. Andy Mulvihill is our guest. He has the book, Action Park. And I've never been there, but I've heard all about it. They made movies about it. Your dad owned it, right, Eugene, or started it, Andy?
Yeah, he had a ski area that he lent some money to guys, and they couldn't pay him, so they get the keys. And he said, what am I going to do with this place that sits empty, 8 months of the year? So he got the idea of starting an amusement park, and it really turned out to be something.
And you turned out to be a lifeguard there as well. It was the kind of thing you could never do today, right? Like, there's no way you could recreate that park today. Way too dangerous.
Oh, no. I mean, it was one of a kind. I mean, you know, our saying was there's nothing in the world like Action Park. You could drive a race car, a speedboat, a tank. You could bungee jump. You could go into a ride and actually fly, go on a water slide with a jump, or even do a 360-degree sweeping water slide. It was unbelievable, and people just loved it. But it wasn't a typical amusement park. It was a participation park where you controlled the action, and with that came certain risks, which my father was willing to let people do because he gave them a thrill, and they loved it. They came back in droves.
It was Pleasure Island for Pinocchio.
Is
Pleasure Island for wild kids, man, that's for sure.
He had six fatalities over the park's lifetime, three of them in the tidal wave pool. What's going on in the tidal wave pool?
Well, you know, it's tough stuff. You know, that lived through those tragedies, and it was not fun. I mean, we did everything we could to be safe. But, you know, when you take people out of the urban areas that don't have necessarily a lot of experience swimming and you put them in water, things can happen. I mean, just look at what happens in the Jersey Shore every summer. So we had our challenges. We did the best we could, but it was tough.
Do we have, Chris, I'm going to ask you, do you have any footage of some of the rides from back in the day? I'm sure that stuff exists online. I mean, some of that hairiest ones that were out there. Did you work with Johnny Knoxville? He must have talked to you quite a bit when he was putting the movie together.
You know, I caught up with him a little late in the process, unfortunately. His lawyers told him to stay away from me for some reason, and so I sought him out. And then it wasn't like whether I could get him on the phone. I couldn't get him off the phone. All he wanted to hear was about what kind of a crazy place it was, and could you really do whatever you wanted to do? Was it really that loose? And I told him it was, and we talked for hours about it. He was terrific. And then when he went to promote his movie, you know, they always ask him inevitably in the shows, you know, like Kimmel asked him, this guy Gene Mulvihill, it must have been a nut, it must have been a kook. And every time Knoxville would say, no, man, he was a genius. He was an awesome guy. So I love Knoxville, man.
Well, what did your dad, is your dad still around?
No, we lost him in 2012.
He died in the tidal pool or just of natural causes? Sorry for being a dick. All right.
That's all right, man.
You got to have a sense of humor to run that kind of place. What did he do before this? Because if he just kind of fell into this, what was his business before this?
He was a serial entrepreneur. You know, he was a guy that just wanted to do things that had never been done before. He was in the cellular telephone business before anybody else was one of the first guys to sell mutual funds. He had a whole sales force doing that. He got into the magnetic resonance business. He was in a ton of different things. And his passion though was the amusement park. And, you know, my mom used to say it was a hobby, and he did all the other things just to make money to pump into the place to build another crazy ride. He just loved doing it.
And how would you conceive, or how would he conceive of these rides?
You know, a lot of different ways. I mean, he traveled the world searching out unique rides. There's an amusement park convention in Orlando every year. He'd go there and he'd find the guy with a little booth in the back. And even if the guy had never built the ride, but he thought it was a great idea, my father said, come on, let's give it a shot. And some of the rides he came up with on his own. But he had a cast of characters like you wouldn't believe from all over the world that would come. And they would try to do the rides. And sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. But it sure created a unique
Right,
well, and it was a much less litigious time, I would imagine.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, he decided to self-insure. He's kind of ahead of the curve. And so we managed a lot of it ourselves. And we learned really early on when there was an accident to interview the people right away. And 9 out of 10 times, the people would say, well, I wasn't following the directions, or I wanted to jump on my buddy's head, or I was kind of goofing around. So, you know, we learned to manage the process, and where we were wrong, we would pay out settlements and take care of like medical bills.
Speaking of new rides, I read that you tested some of the rides, presumably as a young man or teenager. How harrowing is that?
Well, Well, you know, I was 16, 17, 18. I was invincible then. But I got more invincible because I used to wear my hockey equipment. I was a hockey player growing up. And some of the rods, you know, we would put padding on them, but you had to check them out and not put the padding on first. But the one rod was the Cannonball Loop. That was crazy. That was scary. I was scared to death trying that thing out.
Max a padded. Do we have any Cannonball Loop? I guess we're looking at it. You climb up top about three stories, head down into, was it a full closed tube?
Yeah, it's totally closed metal tube that had foam on the inside. It was padded, but it was pitch black. So you jump in the thing, and when you go down it, you know, you go really fast, and then you hit the loop, and you go up, and your stomach gets ripped through your throat, and then you get all disoriented, and you come out. It was really more of a ride to survive than enjoy.
You know what I'm laughing about? It just popped in my head. More homework for you, Maxipata. Dan Aykroyd, Saturday Night Live, Irving Mainway.
Mainway.
Remember that that character?
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. It's a ball, but they're all.
It's called Johnny Roman Candle. Yeah. It's,
it's a bag of glass.
Bag of oily rags and a lighter. That's kind of. So you would do the loop and shoot out the other side. So your dad, this was like, and obviously during the winter months, then it wasn't usable, right? But during the, you could get about eight months out of the year out of it.
Well, it was a ski area. So he built an amusement park, a large part of which was a water park at a ski area, which was great because most of the water parks are on flat ground. They have to build towers. We just would build the rides right into the mountain, but we'd operate the ski area in the winter. You know, most of the rides weren't really in the ski area's way. We'd have to, like, maneuver some things a little bit. But ski area was, like, November through March, and then we'd shut down, and then we'd open up. Really ran from, like, June till September.
And there was a – obviously, I'm from L.A., and it's 2020. So if I wanted to attempt to put a hummingbird feeder on a tree branch in my balcony, I'd have to pull a permit, and then there'd have to be a review process, and then it'd have to go through plan check. Could you just build these rides? Was there nobody from the city who wanted to inspect them? Is there no permitting process? Did anyone have to look at a set of plans, or did you just physically go out there and start building this stuff?
Well, you know, my father was a guy that didn't accept no. You know, he was a serial entrepreneur, and he wasn't a big believer in permits or regulations that kind of got in the way of things. But no, when he came on the scene, the rides were regulated by the state of New Jersey, amusement park rides. But he said, I'm not building an amusement park. This is a participation park. You guys don't even have authority over what I'm doing. So they did come around, but they never knew what to do. They wouldn't know what to check. I mean, if it was a roller coaster that someone would put up, it was a manual and they check it, but he would build a ride. They wouldn't know where to look and what to do. It was crazy.
I'm trying to picture someone, Max Paddock, and show some of the other rides. And so what was admission like back in the day? What would a ticket cost early on?
I think early on, you just would pay to like a couple bucks to use the individual rides. And then we had the pay one price where you paid to get in do the whole thing. And that was, I don't know, 15, 20 bucks or something.
And would people come from far and wide? Like, would people show up from different countries and plan their vacations and stuff like that around it?
Oh, yeah. We had people come from all over the place. But there were enough people in the New York metro area that we just targeted them. And it'd be funny. You'd see a guy come with his girlfriend for the first time, and he'd kind of be very excited and kind of hold back a little bit. Then the guy would show up next week with like 5 or 10 of his craziest friends and then just tear the place up. It attracted a lot of crazies. And I'll tell you, if you had this park in L.A. or the Midwest, I don't think it would have been the same dynamic. You put New Yorkers in that environment, you let them run wild. It created a lot of bedlam, and I had my hands full most of the time.
You know, it's funny. There's a guy who used to be a director over at the Man Show named Tom Stern, who was kind of crazy. He was the guy who helped me drive my BMW off a tow truck many years ago. And he was just kind of a, he's a guy, he was a funny director, but he also, his forte was he worked with monkeys. Whenever we did anything with monkeys, Tom worked with monkeys. And we went up to like Big Bear or some version of Big Bear. Went up with Tom and Jimmy Kimmel and the wives. And we all just went up to go into a cabin and have some summertime vacation and go out on the lake. And they had this weird toboggan flume ride thing that was up on the hill. It was like it was a ski resort, but you'd hop into this weird mechanics creeper toboggan thing and go down this really steep cement flume, I guess, like a gutter is what I'm going to call it. And I'm a good racer, but Tom was beating everyone, including me. And it's because he said he's from back east, and I guess he'd go up to the ski resorts during the summer, and during the summer months, they had this rolling toboggan flumey thing. I think I saw some of it. I don't know if it was Action Park or not that he would go to, but you roll off of that, and everyone had road rash and bloody elbows and knees, and everyone was all jacked up on this thing. And at the very end, it was decided that Tom and I needed to race to find out who was king of the mountain. And I just let it go. Yeah, that's what it was. There's probably some pictures of us too doing it with like skinned up everything. But is that a common thing in ski resorts? I'd never seen it, but apparently he used to do it all the time back east, and that's why he was good at it.
Yeah, we were one of the first guys in the country to put that in. It's called the Alpine Slide. We got it from Germany. The Germans came up with it. And there was a guy up in Bromley, Vermont, who put in the very first one. And he had the rights across the whole country. And my dad bought it from him. But he said he wanted the fastest one there was. So it was treacherous. It was very treacherous. And you can totally control how fast you went. But if you wanted to go really fast, you could come out of the thing and you get yourself beat up. But you know, my father was a guy that was okay with letting people have control and letting them have a thrill. He really took the idea of skiing and applied it to an amusement park. So if you go skiing, you want to go on the bunny hill and go slow, you can. It's all right. But if you want a real thrill, you go up to the steeps, you go to the moguls, ski in the trees. It's fun, but there's risks and you can get hurt. And my father kind of took that idea and applied it to an amusement park. And people came in droves for it.
Well, and that's what's so fun, too, reading about it. You know, there's articles that say, you know, somebody smiled through their chipped tooth and said, I can't wait to go back again. You know, like that's there's almost like a little bit of a fight club. Like you feel alive when you get skinned up and when you're going on this stuff.
Yeah, it was funny because it's true. You get on this toboggan, you kind of lay down on it and you can control the brake. And if you control the brake, you can get through the course in a pretty good time. Safely, but if you just want to let the brake go, you'll fucking fly through this course. And if you make it through, you'll do it in record time, but there's a good chance you'll get thrown off of one of the turns. And when you get thrown off one of the turns, it's just gravel and rocks and dirt and the side of a hill, and everyone would go rolling down and everyone was all skinned up. And when it came down to the final race, there was money being bet. And I just went, fuck it. I'm not touching the brake. I'm just leaning back. I'm not going to touch anything. And I ended up beating Tom on this race up at, what was it, Mike? It must be Bear Mountain.
They have an alpine slide at Big Bear.
It kicks the shit out of you. But again, it's you doing it to yourself. I mean, you get to decide. Foolish pride. So
full runnings.
Yeah. So your dad now, was your dad fun, or was he a horrible drunk?
Those are the only two options.
He was a very interesting guy. He was a Marine. He had a family of six. You know, he'd be home for dinner every Sunday. But he was a guy that he was a bit of a prankster, and he liked doing creative things. He was a real entrepreneur and motivator. He could raise money for anything, and he was fearless, absolutely fearless. He would take on any risk. And if things didn't work out, he'd move on to the next thing. So the Action Park really was was all him. And people loved it.
Is it? It's closed now. Why did it close? It closed in 96? Yeah, September 96.
he had a great run. He had a 20-year run with it. And towards the end, there was a refinance and it didn't work out. He's gotten some real estate deals. And the real estate market kind of crashed. So he felt it was time to sell. There was a lot of competition. So he sold it to a company called IntraWest, which wanted to develop a ski village there. And they took down most of the rides. There's a few rides there left now, and they have a little water park, but it's not anything of like what it was in the past.
You, I'm looking at your interesting bio here. You were elected vice president of the State Board of Education for New Jersey 2019 through the 2020. How do you do that? And what do we need to know about your job, and how do we fix the schools?
Oh, you know, I'm so glad you asked me that, because I'm actually pretty passionate about it. It's funny, when I've been on the board about 8 years, and when I got put on, there was a former commissioner that was friends with my dad, and I called him up and I said, what should I do with this? You know, I don't really know a whole lot about education. They actually brought me on because they needed a guy that wouldn't take any crap from the teachers unions. So he said, look, find one or two things you're passionate about. So I'm a pretty libertarian guy. I believe in freedom and equality of opportunity, not necessarily outcome. And young kids that are in the cities that, you know, come from broken families and they're poor, if they don't get an education, they got no chance, none. And we have failed them so miserably in New Jersey in the inner cities. But, you know, when Christie came in, he brought a thing in which is really taken over around the world. He brought in choice in charter schools. And it's absolutely incredible what that has done for the kids in Newark and other inner cities in New Jersey. You know, there's been years of talk about this disparity between, you know, the achievement gap between the minorities and the whites. These charter schools have wiped that out. The kids in the charter schools in Newark are outperforming the average student in throughout the state of New Jersey. But right now, Christie's out, Murphy comes in, and what does he do? He's owned by the teachers union. They don't want any more charter schools. There's effectively a moratorium. There's 30,000 kids that want to go to charter schools in Newark whose lives could be saved, but they aren't, because these guys think, nah, we don't need any more seats because the teachers unions are against them. It's crazy.
I'm glad this is the way you think about this. I have no idea what your politics are. I just saw here that you were the State Board of Education for New Jersey. I have no idea where you come down on charter schools. I just had a talk with Ted Cruz about this. I had no idea where Ted Cruz's head was at, although, of course, he's very much for charter schools as well. This notion, you know, I said something to Ted Cruz in yesterday's podcast. Or was it the day before? Day before. I said, look, if you come from a horrible environment, you know, inner city, single mom, you know, all the tropes and cliches, right? She's working three jobs. She can't take care of you. You're running the streets. You're getting involved with gangs or whatever. If you come from that household, if you come from that background, then all you have to prevent you from jail, death, gangs, poverty and addiction and everything you don't want is a decent school system, right? Like that's all you have. It's got to kind of be one or the other. You can have, look, what you want is good family, good school system. That's the best. And by the time you're 18, you'll have a great shot at life, right? But if you have bad family and bad home situation, bad neighborhood, and a good school system, then that's your chance out. That could save you. It's not as good as good, but it's still bad good, and maybe you end up spending more time at school. Maybe you spend some weekends there, or you stay longer in the evening. Maybe you find some great teachers and counselors that turn your life around. But if you got bad school, bad home, and then you're 18, and we just sort of throw you out from the bad school, bad neighborhood, and bad home, you don't stand a fucking chance. So the competition in the schools makes a huge difference. And all the data's in, the statistics are in, these charter schools work, and the vouchers work, and school choice works. It all works. The notion that half of this country politically is against this notion of choice, it's school choice, it's just school choice, is insane. It's like saying as I was saying to Ted Cruz, what if you just had to buy a car based on the dealership that was closest to your house? You couldn't go anywhere else, whatever that dealership was. And that's literally what it was. Just wherever you're born, wherever your parents live, wherever your single mom lives, whatever that school is that's closest to the crappy neighborhood you live in, that's the school you must attend. You have no choice. That seems like the cruelest thing in the world to do to these kids who could use the most help. And the notion that this is even a political discussion is like sad and pathetic. It's really sad. It's just about teachers' unions. That's all. And the amount of money they contribute politically. This should be a bipartisan issue. It's about kids. It's about the future. It's about the future of the most vulnerable kids, the kids we never stop talking about, the inner city kids who need a step up and a helping hand. Yet, if half this country, half the politicians would like to get rid of this choice, it's criminal. To me, it literally is criminal because these kids end up being criminals and shooting people or getting killed themselves. Go ahead, Andy. Be passionate.
You know, I think we're going to win this because as you said, they're winning. They're doing an awesome job. There's big pushback now. I mean, every Democrat that ran was against charter schools, every single one of them.
But to be fair, I mean, to be fair to them, they're not against charter schools. They're pro teachers unions paying them. The idea of charter schools, they would probably like. They're just pro union.
I don't know. Do you care about the kids? I mean, is education about the teachers or the kids? I'm sorry. I think it's about the kids. It's all every decision we make has got to be what's in the best interest of the kids. And it's not propping up the teachers unions.
I just wish it wasn't even political. I don't know. Maybe we have to figure out a way to stop unions, whether it's cop unions or teachers unions, or maybe I have to figure out a way where unions just can't get involved with politics because it's just not helping. Ultimately, it's let's get some competition going. Let's get the best schools we can do for the kids and let's. And it helps disproportionately, obviously, black and brown kids the most. My kids don't need it. Yes.
I think maybe you underestimate the public opinion as well as the impact of the teachers unions, because there's polling over the last 3 years that shows that a little more than 2/3 of the public support school choice. And I'm guessing that the reason is because of lobbyists and unions and stuff is the reason that it's so divisive. It's not that divisive, really. More than 2/3 of people support it.
It's not divisive. Yeah, it's not divisive. Like, do you want choice in car dealerships? Do you want choice in fast food? Do you want choice in movies? Do you want choice in vacation destinations? Like, we want choice for everything. It's a simple union money teacher situation, and we should figure out a way around it. And it's sad because it's the kids that suffer. And again, it's not the kids. It's not really our kids, so to speak. It's not kids. You know, you live in a good neighborhood. There's a good school system nearby. And by the way, everyone who has money has school choice. There's four private schools within 6 miles of my house. There's four private schools within 2 miles of my house. I have enough money and I have a choice. I could send my kids to the private school or I could send them to the public school. The public school is good enough. I've told you, my kids are the dumbest kids in that school, so that'd be a waste of money bringing them to a private school. But technically everyone who has money has school choice because you have the choice of sending your kid to a private school. It'd just be nice if we got the politics out of it. I asked famously Maxipata, just because it always makes me mad, when Dr. Drew was going to talk to Barbara Boxer and her daughter some years ago on his show, and I just said, ask him about school choice. She was a California, I don't know, congresswoman or senator for many years. Anyway, I was like,
Boxer was a senator, Bruce.
Senator. I was like, just tell me why you'd be against school choice. Why would you be against giving kids and parents the freedom to pick out a school? And it would also up the game of the public school, which has no competition right now. They'd be forced to kind of pull it together. And I told Drew to ask her that question on the air, and she laughed it off and sort of made fun of me, which was satisfying.
You got a long, well thought out response.
It's not, you cannot put into words why you're against this other than teachers' unions. Yes, Andy.
Oh, they come up with all sorts of reasons. They lie about what the data is. In fact, Thomas Sowell, who's now 90, just came out with a new book about charter schools, and half the book is just documents of data to prove the point. And it's a very good read. It's really about the money, because what happens is when a charter school opens, the way it gets funded initially, at least in New Jersey, initially the building is from private donations, but to operate it, what happens is they take the funds away from the traditional schools. If a traditional school's spending $15,000 on a kid, you open up a charter school with 100 kids, you get 15,000 times 100. The money shifts away from the traditional school. So they hate that. They have less money, but they've got less kids. And so it's always about the money. But the thing is, we're not talking about like political patronizing, taking care of your friend, enriching yourself. We're talking about screwing kids. We're talking about hurting kids. It's like the most despicable thing. And you hear that these folks are all for the downtrodden, and we have a solution, but they run from it. It just shows what motivates them. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, sad that everything has a sort of political bent to it. We have Barbara Boxer and her daughter, Nicole, on school vouchers.
And what's wrong with school vouchers, he wants to know. Why not school vouchers? If people want to use the free market.
Oh, the problem, I'll tell you the problem with it. It's taxpayer money, and it's going to schools, away from schools. It's money taking out of schools where 95% of the children in the country go. I have no problem with charters, but I think to take people out to private school, it's taxpayers' funding that's going there, and I think that's wrong.
I would just say to Adam, update your spiel, dude.
Well, but what
I mean, that debate sort of just, that's like a 10, 12 year old debate, really.
The voucher system?
Yeah. Like,
you know, it's funny that, you know, I thought the
let's
charter,
get a little more progressive.
I thought the
all right, I should get more progressive with my spiel. Yeah, the money follows the kid, and they don't want the money to leave.
Charter schools are public schools. They're public schools.
Well, vouchers are the other one.
Well, these are two different things, right?
Well, they're the sort of the same thing, which is you get a choice, school choice, basically. But yes, charter and vouchers, not the same thing. That is true. Either way, look, later on, once you get out of high school, then you get a choice. You can go to any college you want if they'll accept you. You know what I mean? There's grants and loans and things like that, and you could just go to the one that suits you or go to the best one. Either way, the system is not working well, and I would like to open it up, have some competition, and give these kids a shot. That's my feeling. But, you know, I'm a humanitarian who also likes to take a toboggan run every once in a while on an alpine hill. All right, let me hit Geico here. Right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on cars, motorcycles, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money you'd already be saving if you're with Geico. So what are you waiting for? Hit Geico. Never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch over, and if you do it by October 7th, you can get in on this. Visit geico.com to learn more at geico.com. Yeah, what do you know about LeBron James's school in, I guess it's in Ohio somewhere. I kind of like that. Starting his own school. Do you know anything about that, Andy?
No, I've heard about it, but hey, look, if LeBron is put up the money to help charter school or a new school, I think that's awesome, you know? The great thing about charter schools, if they don't work out, they can have their charter revoked and they get closed down. If they fail to educate kids, it would be great if we could shut down traditional schools like that too that are failing kids.
It also seems like a bit of an optics thing, because I don't know about the people you guys are friends with on Facebook, but I have a lot of feed clogged with people saying how horrible this is and how, you know, diverting money from public school is a crime and it's ridiculous. I also have friends that have the same ideals that you talk to one-on-one and like, well, my kid's in a charter school. So is it a dirty little secret?
No, it's not a dirty secret. The evidence is out there. They have standardized tests and you can see how the charter schools outperform the other schools.
What Gina's saying is none of the people that are voting against the charter schools are sending their kids to the horrible failing inner city schools. That's for sure. And my whole thing is like, what are we comparing it to? I always hear about the inner city schools of Baltimore and Chicago. Los Angeles is pretty bad. St. Louis. Like, what are we comparing it to? The schools are failing the kids. If we do 10% better, that's 10% better than we had before. You know, that's kind of my thing. My thing is like, we're comparing it to a system that we're admitting is failing and that we keep talking about is failing, and that we keep talking about how important it is that the kids get a good education. So to me, it's a kind of what do you have to lose? The LeBron school is I Promise School. It's a public school. And I actually talked to, the drummer for, we're going to think of this.
Oh, Quaid's Band?
Yeah, Quaid's Band. His name's escaping me, but it'll pop to me in a second. He's the Lenny Kravitz drummer.
Franklin
is trying to start his own schools in Chicago.
Franklin.
I think, yeah. Vanderbilt.
Lenny Kravitz is drummer.
Right. He's trying to start. Anyway, I like innovation. Look, here's what I'm saying. There's NASA, and then there's Elon Musk. My point is I kind of like the Elon Musk part of it. Like, I want a way. I think that guy can figure out a way for us to get to Mars cheaper and more efficiently than NASA can. And that's basically my world approach, pardon the pun. All right, Andy, the book is out. It's available now. Action Park, Fast Times, Wild Rides, and the Untold Story of America's Most Dangerous Amusement Park. It's available as we speak. And what is going on that land today, Andy?
The skier is still there, and there's some real estate development that went on. And there's a small water park with some of the rides, but very few of them. But if you want to see my dad's legacy alive and well, he went just down the road. He built like an adult action park with we got 6 golf courses and spas and a wine cellar, a place called Crystal Springs. So it's a fun place right down the road to check out.
I like the cut of your dad's jib. And the movie, should we watch the movie? I haven't seen the movie yet, the Johnny Knoxville movie.
You know, Action Point was his movie, and it was just kind of inspired by Action Park. It really wasn't the story. But what's really cool is when we were writing this book and it was turning out pretty well, we went and shopped it in Hollywood, and we got 20th Century Fox Television and Hulu were one of 10 bidders, and we ended up doing a deal with them, and they're going to make a TV series out of it. So I'm looking forward to that. And what's pretty cool is they're Disney companies, and my dad always held Disney as the gold standard for amusement park operators. So I think he'd be proud looking from down up above to see that happening.
Andy Mulvihill, thank you very much for joining us. We'll bid you adieu. I'll do a 15-second JB Weld, and then we'll do the news. Yeah, you want to weld it? JB Weld it, man. Don't just glue it. JB Weld it. JBWeld.com. Retailers, you can get it everywhere. Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, and more. JB Weld. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back and do the news with Gina Grad right after this.